That's better, Annabelle giggled. Wouldn't want to hurt one of Prince James's three advisors, would you? That would cause so much trouble.
Enough, Annabelle.
A gruff voice startled the two ladies.
Go back to the wagons. You're causing a scene.
Annabelle pouted again.
Stop ruining things for me, Joshy. I just wanted to say hello.
I heard you do that already. Now go.
The voice's owner revealed himself to be a tall man of muscle with short black hair. Annabelle stuck her tongue at him before hurrying away.
You'd think she'd act her age instead of her appearance,
the man said softly as he looked down at Fiora.
I'm sorry for her actions.
Hello to you too, Josh, Fiora said, her rage melting into disappointment.
I see you've grown.
Josh grunted and chuckled.
Yeah, no more shortness for me. I could probably lift you now.
Very likely. Now, if you'll excuse me,
Fiora said as she moved to leave. Josh gently grabbed her hand, and she stopped.
Fiora, if you would listen to me,
Josh pleaded.
I've been trying to get in touch with you for years, and—
No,
Fiora said, without turning to look at him.
I will not forgive you. Alfred always aimed for something bigger, and Annabelle always hung on to whatever he said, but you— I never thought you would sell me out.
We were kids, Josh muttered. I was a weakling with no backbone.
He was the prince.
What could I have done?
You could have said no,
Fiora growled as she wrenched her arm free of his grasp.
Framing me for stealing from the orphanage, just so he could have the pleasure of throwing the demon witch out on the streets. I could believe the others for siding with him, but not you. No, you chose your path, Josh.
Fine, 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 then,
Josh spat out angrily.
You know James also feels regret, right? That guy didn't really mean for it to go so far, and once back in the castle, he couldn't make amends. He told me that—
And you believe him? Judge the action and the result, Josh. There is no room for desired outcomes if they don't happen, Fiora snapped. Now leave me be. I have to get my men together to escort you all back.
Fiora left the large man behind, her fists curled in anger. Chapter 3
Rowan, I need 2 ales for table 3,
Millie called out from the floor.
Understood. 2 ales coming up,
Rowan answered as he grabbed 2 wooden mugs and placed them under the ale barrel. He turned the handle of the faucet and carefully watched the ale fill each mug until the foam layer reached the top. When they were filled, he placed them on the countertop and cried out,
Ale's all ready, Millie.
Millie, the 14-year-old daughter of the tavern owner Fred, grabbed the mugs and gave Rowan a grateful smile. Millie stood taller than Rowan, with a cute face framed by slightly curly hair that reached down her back in waves. Approaching 15 years, her body was dressed in a tavern wench's outfit that played on her growth from cute to beautiful. The skirt touched the top of her knees, and the blouse, while not revealing, was tight enough to display her growing womanhood. Still, the men were careful to treat her properly under the ever-watchful eye of her father.
Thanks for the help, Rowan,
Millie winked at him.
With father struggling to cook, it really helps that you're here.
No problem,
Rowan dismissed her thanks.
I, as prince, always pay back my debts.
Your father has been kind enough to let me stay here, after all.
Rowan, who supposedly turned 11 recently, was a boy with piercing eyes and dark brown hair with a streak of gray. While posing as a refugee from the Empire's various conquests, the reality was that Rowan was a prince from a long-dead kingdom that had once ruled the country of Nahatra centuries ago. He had been placed in a magical slumber within an undead dungeon and had been rescued by Doc and his monsters. Due to the large magical contamination he'd taken in during his slumber, Rowan's body had become a hybrid between undead and human when he awoke in the dungeon.
Upon learning of the circumstances of his rescue, Rowan had sworn allegiance to Doc and entrusted his undead half to him. This rendered Rowan unique, for not only could he leave the dungeon, but if he ever died, he would be reborn as an undead within the dungeon, though he would never be able to leave it. As Millie hurried away with the ales, Rowan returned to cleaning the various wooden mugs and more expensive glass mugs that lined the bar shelves. He took great care with the glass mugs, because they were worth their weight in silver. As he worked, Rowan couldn't help but think of the life he was currently living. When he first entered the town, Rowan had found that he couldn't properly read or speak due to the evolution of language over time. Named a spy by a group of nationalist thugs, Rowan had been chased through the town and ended up hiding in a tavern. There, the owner, Fred, had asserted himself and shielded Rowan. Taking pity on the young man, Fred decided to shelter the boy. His daughter, Millie, then decided that Rowan would be her little brother, whether he wanted to be or not. Rowan couldn't stop his eyes from twitching as he remembered his first meeting with Millie. She had acted bubbly and excited at the time, more like a younger girl rather than her own age. Later, she revealed her real character to be cunning, blunt, and in some cases, two-faced. She did teach him how to read and speak, but he felt irked throughout the experience due to her constant teasing. However, they shared a moment when it was revealed that Millie was lonely and desperate for a friend. With the early death of her mother, Millie had worked for her father most of her life and had little opportunity to have fun. After moving to the dungeon town, a place of danger and not suited for children, she found herself surrounded by adults and had acted younger to get along with them. Rowan had relented and forgiven her, starting their friendship. "Well, there was the flesh dragon, too," Rowan chuckled to himself. About a week ago, Rowan and Millie had gone to the Adventurers Guild at the invitation of the Guildmaster herself to have their magic affinities tested due to the surprising display of magic Rowan had shown accidentally. However, before Millie and Rowan could let the shock of their massive potential set in, the entire town had been attacked by the Empire in the form of a magically corrupted nobleman who could attach himself to people and use them as puppets. Rowan, with his special magical connection to the dungeon, was able to track the source of the attack to a building where he and Millie confronted the twisted blob of flesh that had once been Lord Rodge, father of Corrin, a deceased, traitorous knight. Unfortunately, before they could pry more answers from him, Rotch had sensed the dungeon's connection to Rowan and gone berserk. He subsequently transformed into a false dragon, made entirely of flesh, and was defeated by the combined efforts of everyone in town. In the aftermath, neither Millie nor Rowan had discussed the events of that day. The town had fallen into a kind of shocked rush, with everyone running around preparing for a siege and repairing the damage from the attack. The town's mood was low, and tensions seemed to be running high against various groups of people, including those who had been used as puppets, that the newly arrived elves, the clergy, adventurers, miners, and anyone else people could find to blame. Rowan's heart clenched as he watched the leaders of the town struggle to control the irrational blame and paranoia arising in the townspeople. It reminded him so much of the last days of his kingdom when it was on the brink of collapse from invaders. For the moment, Rowan was assisting Millie and Fred with the tavern. It was a popular spot for workmen and workwomen to pick up meals for later or drink after a hard day's effort. Thankfully, it was the end of the lunch rush, and the number of patrons within the tavern was slowly decreasing. After a few minutes, Fred walked out from the kitchen. Fred was a former adventurer who had settled down with Millie's mother to open a small restaurant using his savings. Though retired, he still looked tough with his broad shoulders and thick arms. He grinned down at Rowan.
"Thanks for the help today," he said. "It would have been really inconvenient to serve drinks and cook food by myself."
Daddy, what about me? Did I help too?
Millie pouted, still in her acting mood. Fred smiled warmly at his daughter and patted her gently on the head.
Silly girl, you always help me by keeping those starving wolves at bay while I cook. I'll be leaving now to go help the men with reinforcing the walls. Take care of Rowan while I'm out.
Yes, sir, Millie saluted, giving Rowan a cheeky wink. Rowan frowned. Fred, as a royal prince of age, I no longer require a maid to watch over me. I can take care of myself.
Of course you can, sure,
Fred nodded absent-mindedly as he turned to grab a tool bag.
Well, have a good evening, Your Highness.
With a sarcastic laugh, Fred left. Millie switched her arms behind her head, inadvertently drawing Rowan's gaze for a quick moment. She giggled at him and said,
All right, you heard the man. I'm in charge again. Who's the maid now?
A knock at the door distracted the two of them. With a curious look, Millie walked over to the door and slid the eyehole cover open.
Ah, Millie, I was just coming by to visit you,
the noble-born Rolf greeted with a broad smile. One of the few children within the town, Rolf had met Millie back in Durin during the time Millie's father had taken a job from Rolf's father. His family had moved to the dungeon town to seek fortune, and Rolf became reacquainted with Millie through the Adventurers Guild classes.
Oh, hello, Rolf, Millie greeted. What brings you by here?
Why, my noble self is here to speak with you and partake of your fine cuisine,
Rolf boasted pompously.
Your tavern has a high reputation, even among us nobles, but of course, most of the credit must be given to the beautiful waitress.
Rowan coughed from behind Millie.
We're closed. Go away.
Is that poor oaf here?
Rolf frowned and searched through the eyehole with his gaze.
Millie, as a noble, I feel it is my duty to remind you that uncultured and poor filth should never be allowed near a lady of your beauty. He is liable to do unspeakable things to you when your guard is down.
Rolf and Rowan hadn't gotten along since their first meeting, where Rowan displayed his immense magical talent. Their feud had worsened once Rolf learned Rowan was living with Millie, and the two never missed a chance to fight.
Oh, go stick your head in the ground, you bespeckled peacock,
Rowan said disdainfully.
It's after hours, and we have chores to do.
How dare you? Rolf paused. Danny, what is a peacock?
To Rolf's right stood his ever-loyal minion, Danny. The shifty teen scratched his growing beard thoughtfully.
I believe that a peacock is a beautiful bird found in the north, he said after a moment's thought. It is well known for being vain and proud. Ah, so it is a compliment the refugee has paid me,
Rolf smiled winningly.
I see he has finally come to his senses.
Sir, Danny corrected him, he did tell you to stick your head in the ground, which is a most insulting position for a noble to be found in.
You knave, Rolf roared angrily. Come out so I can show you your place in life, on the ground at my feet.
As much fun as that would be to see,
Millie interrupted the two sides.
The tavern is closed, and we have work to do. Bye, Rolf.
She shut the eye hole.
Well, that was fun,
Millie giggled cheerfully as she led Rowan to the back of the tavern.
I must say, you two are very amusing.
Rowan grunted.
He's just an arrogant lout with a big mouth and some family backing. If my kingdom still existed, he'd be crawling at my feet. Oh, so it's just an issue with pride you have with him?
Millie teased him.
But it doesn't seem that you get extra irritable with him when he talks flatteringly to me. Whatever,
Rowan muttered, choosing to ignore her.
Let's just finish chopping the wood. Boo,
Millie whined.
That's not fun at all. Let's do it later. I thought you were supposed to be the older, more responsible one,
Rowan mocked as he walked over to grab two axes from the back room.
Of course, but we've been working almost nonstop for a week now. My arms are tired, and I know my face is about to droop from all the fake smiling I've had to do.
Can you believe that one man tried to propose to me? Millie grumbled.
I can believe your dad shattered his bones for it, Rowan guffawed as the two went into the back area. Following the same rhythm, they swung their axes in time and sliced the logs in half with single swings. Rowan couldn't help but whistle in appreciation.
Your dad's training has really performed wonders for my strength. I'm even catching up to you.
It's not fair, Millie argued. I have to work twice as hard to get stronger, while you work twice as little. Sometimes it really sucks being a girl. You won't ever be looked down on or ogled like I am.
Actually, Millie screwed up her face and thought, didn't those old bats stare you down like a piece of meat? You know, the bath ladies.
Don't remind me, Rowan shuddered. I will never get used to taking a public bath, especially with those, mature ladies.
Millie giggled, and Rowan smiled as they worked together to finish their chores. When they were done, the two took a quick bath in Fred's personal bath and changed clothes for the late afternoon. Having completed their responsibilities for the moment, they lay down side by side on Millie's bed. Closing their eyes and folding their arms, the two began meditating and controlling the mana within their bodies.
Hey, Rowan, Millie spoke up after a while. Can we talk?
About what? Rowan asked.
Millie broke her meditation and sat up, hugging her right knee.
Do you think we're going to die soon? She asked.
Rowan raised an eyebrow and rolled over so his belly was facing her.
Why do you ask?
The men were talking today. They're all nervous and scared that the Empire is going to send so many monsters and soldiers that nothing will remain of this town. Some were worried that we'd be used as experiments and would spend the rest of our lives tortured.
Rowan snorted.
There is no point worrying about that far in the future when we have today challenging us. Don't let them get to you.
I guess, Millie said quietly. Why are you so calm about all this?
Because I am a prince, of course, Rowan declared. I'm very familiar with this kind of stress from watching my father handle the country.
At this, Millie burst into laughter and giggles, releasing her knee to slap the bed. Rowan frowned at her and sighed.
Still don't believe me, do you? He muttered.
Millie shook her head as she calmed down.
Oh, no, I do. It's just funny to hear you be so serious about things even adults are pissing their pants over. I guess I would expect nothing more from a dungeon monster.
Rowan felt his blood turn to ice and bolted up from the bed.
How do you know?
You mean besides admitting it just now?
Millie smiled coyly at the younger boy.
Well, I wonder. Maybe it was when the giant flesh monster declared it, or maybe it was when you watched a slime tentacle drag away the monster's corpse and didn't say anything. Now, I wonder what I could do with this little tidbit of knowledge.
Rowan felt torn between fleeing and pleading. If his secret were to be exposed, there was no telling what would happen to him.
Just eat her, Rowan heard Doc's voice in his head. That's what I'd do. She probably tastes good.
Quiet, Doc, Claire joined in. Rowan, dear, you need to find out what she plans to do with this information. If she hasn't revealed it to anyone else, then maybe she wants something from you. Oh, but if she is planning on spreading your secret, you should kill her. In that case, eating would be easiest, and it would get rid of the evidence.
Rowan gulped.
What do you want from me?
Millie gave him a quizzical look.
Want from you? That's a dumb question, Rowan. You're family now. I wouldn't do something as distasteful as blackmail you into doing things.
Rowan sighed in relief.
Instead, you would just have to listen to me and stay with me whenever I desire.
Millie finished with a triumphant grin.
Isn't that blackmail?
Rowan asked darkly.
Nope, it's just business as usual. Let's talk more after we finish our daily magic meditation for Master Mary.
Rowan reluctantly rejoined her on the bed,
this time crossing his legs under him. As he closed his eyes and began to chant softly, Millie's eyes grew sad and solemn as she gazed at him.
"You already promised me, didn't you? She may have made you forget, but I won't," she whispered.
Her mind returned to the events that took place after the two of them had returned home. She quietly stroked Mr. Bubbles the skull, which seemed to glow red briefly, before returning to normal. Chapter 4. With the ever-constant dungeon of adventure and death, Doc watched as his slimes fought with adventurers. Being the dungeon itself, Doc could easily observe multiple fights across his floors and predict the outcomes of each one. In this current moment, a single adventurer was using fire magic to fight a small group of bug slimes on the fourth floor, and a duo of adventurers were fighting off some herb slimes on the seventh floor while protecting a few herb-gathering alchemists. Each fight went through Doc's crystal. Nothing was hidden from his sight in the dungeon except Claire's home. The thought of Claire roused Doc from his monotonous observation, remembering that Claire had used her secret exit to go out to town. Ever since her successful theft of the alcohol from the elf tree party, Claire had been inspired to return to town and search for new things that could inspire new slime evolution. The booze, as adventurers called the alcohol, had failed to inspire a new evolution from the slimes they tested, and they had run out of spirits from trying.
"Claire," Doc said through their mental bond, "have you reached the town yet? Are you all right?"
Claire's exasperated reply came a moment later.
"If you are going to be so worried about me, then why didn't you let me use the new exits?"
"You know why, Claire," Doc reminded her. "You and I already had a talk about using the town exits. You made sure I understood that we were really lucky that only Rowan saw me take the corpse away. You've also taught me that adventurers would steal you away if given the chance, and I don't want to risk you getting captured where I can't save you."
"And yet," Claire remarked with sarcasm, "even with that all said, you still let me leave the safety of the dungeon to go to a town full of adventurers who all stand to gain from my capture. If the end result is going to be the same, why not make my journey easier?"
Doc paused to think for a moment.
"Wait, why am I in the wrong here? You made me let you go," he complained.
"Of course I did. I might be a young pixie of 50 years, but I've still learned enough from Mommy to not be found so easily," Claire declared with pride. "I can conjure some of the best invisibility spells of my generation, and I can even cast mimicry and camouflage spells."
"Huh." Doc blanked for a moment. "I didn't realize you were useful for things besides information."
There was a very long pause.
"Hey, Doc," Claire began. "Did you or did you not watch me during the undead dungeon invasion?"
Maybe? Doc tried to remember. "I seem to recall you had a kind of battle outfit on."
"What? Is that all you remember?" Claire asked incredulously. "That was a complete set of magical pixie armor that, according to my mother, was made by the finest pixie smiths and the best materials. You didn't see my flashy fight with the skeletons or the magic battle with the undead mages? My heart is breaking," she cried out in frustration. "I worked really hard, you know. It's not easy to slay things 10 times your height with a sword smaller than their pinky."
Doc coughed awkwardly.
"My bad," he apologized. "You must have fought extremely hard and exhausted a lot of your power during the fight."
"I really did," Claire grumbled angrily. "What were you doing that was so important?"
"Well, I was focusing on the large dungeon battle against the skeletons, as well as the 2 other groups of slimes outside the dungeon," Doc remembered.
Claire's face grew flush with embarrassment.
She stuttered. Anyway, I am indeed a strong warrior. Dungeon pixies originally had to fight alongside their dungeons way back in the past, and those skills are passed down to every generation.
My mother, being of a family of undead dungeon pixies, was especially good with sneaky spells. Oh, found a flower to experiment with.
Let's focus on what you just said, Doc pressed. Did you just say your mother and the rest of the family are undead dungeon pixies? I thought the assignments were random and that the dungeons chose their monsters. Also, didn't you also just say your armor was crafted by some of the finest pixie smiths? That means your family is well connected, right?
All true, Claire acknowledged as she quickly stole some more flowers. To begin, remember how I hid the option for you to choose undead as your starting monster race? The members of the oldest and strongest dungeon pixie families all do the same when they find their partner. I'm a bit of an outlier, really, in terms of being a dungeon pixie, since I don't like undead. Even my mommy had to admit I was the white sheep of the family.
Claire, if you know all this about your people, does this mean your memory has been restored fully? Doc asked carefully. This is the first time you've talked about your family since that mental break you had about a year ago now.
Hey, our anniversary is coming up, Claire said brightly. We'll have to do something to celebrate later.
Claire, don't change the subject, Doc said firmly. I'm worried about you.
He heard Claire sigh. Fine, she admitted. While not completely fixed, I recall many parts and aspects of being a dungeon pixie. Remember how when I first showed up and cried because you were my first assignment? I was clearly wrong there. You were and are my only possible dungeon partner, unless something drastic happens. I'm guessing you want to know more about dungeon pixies then.
Yes, Doc declared strongly.
As I told you, dungeon pixies are a race of pixie that inherited the ancestral blood created by the ancestor dungeon pixie and his dungeon. Because we all descend from the same male pixie, the various groups of my race are divided based on the strength of the bloodline. Every other generation, we dungeon pixies are required to find a mate from the original pixie race to prevent inbreeding problems. The best candidates are earth pixies because our ancestor was one originally. My family is one of the oldest and purest lines, as we only have earth pixie ancestors. My mother married an earth pixie, my daddy. Having my memory fixed, I've remembered that I did grow up knowing him, and he is the one who taught me about plants, to the disapproval of my mother. However, he was killed by adventurers when visiting a relative. That much was true.
I'm sorry, Doc said in sympathy.
Yeah, me too. Claire sighed in resignation. I was the closest child to him. The others took after Mommy more. Maybe that was why she cast a spell on me after the attack, to try to make me more like her.
She sounds kind of mean. From what I've seen through Rowan, I don't think normal families cast mind-altering magic on their children. In fact, I really believe that's frowned upon.
No! Claire shouted resolutely. My mommy is a great pixie. She taught me loads and took care of me whenever I got sick. She was just disappointed I wasn't more like her.
I think you are great. There's no other pixie I'd rather be partnered with.
Thanks, Doc.
Claire smiled while flying over the busy street.
I appreciate that.
So, Doc continued, does your pixie species do anything else interesting?
Oh, well, there is a competition every 50 years between pixies, Claire said, unworried as she snagged a bottle of booze and turned it invisible. I guess that's coming up soon, since the last one was the year I was born. I'm still new, though, so I don't expect to get an invitation this time.
That's too bad, I guess.
Doc seemed to shrug through the bond.
Are you almost done collecting?
Just about. Spying a metal ingot near a forge, she swooped over and struggled to lift it. Eh? She muttered, suddenly aware of a pair of eyes watching her. Feeling threatened, Claire vanished as she took off at top speed, back to the hidden dungeon exit. Olaf watched her leave,
a thoughtful expression on his face. When Claire returned to the dungeon, she decided not to tell Doc about her near encounter with a human. There was no sense getting him more riled up about something that did no harm.
"All right, Doc," Claire began. "For today's experiments, I have more alcohol, various flowers, some hair I pulled from a balding man, a stick I took from a puppy, and some broken glass I found outside an alchemist shop."
"That sounds like you brought back a bunch of garbage," Doc said candidly. "Also, some of those sound like real thefts."
"Well, I did, and they might be, but who knows if any of this waste could be useful? Might as well give it a shot."
Claire shrugged her shoulders.
"You're right. Now, what do we try first?"
The two locked eyes, or in Doc's case, general awareness.
"Booze," they said together.
Claire rubbed her little hands together.
"All right, we figured out last time that alcohol does nothing to a normal slime, or any of the elemental slimes. Well, setting fire slimes on fire doesn't count. I vote this time we try the herb slime."
"Why herb slime?" Doc asked.
"Because some types of alcohol are made from plants," Claire explained. "We should also try the plant slime, just in case."
"All right, I'll summon them up," Doc said, as he focused his mana.
Two green slimes popped up from the floor and jiggled as they landed. Claire opened the glass bottle and poured the alcohol on both slimes.
"Claire, why did you take the entire glass bottle of alcohol? That's expensive," Doc admonished her.
"I needed the glass for my home, and we can use it in more experiments."
Claire waved him off.
"Hey, look, something is happening."
The herb slime vibrated as it underwent evolution. Its slime arched out of its body in loops, changing colors from green to a light brown. When it calmed down, the new slime sat slightly taller than it used to.
"What's the magic analysis say?" Claire asked.
"It's a booze slime," Doc reported.
His magic displayed the information in the normal magic blue box.
"An herb slime absorbed enough alcohol to the point that its original herbal slime layer has fermented into a special drinkable slime. When defeated, rather than dropping a normal slime core, a booze slime will leave behind a core that can release its personal alcohol. The variety of herb slime it evolves from can affect the taste."
"That's not something I expected to see," Claire admitted. "I don't expect adventurers to figure out this slime is drinkable for a long time. Perhaps you can use it on the fire and water slime force as a supplement?"
"I guess I could," Doc agreed. "Let's continue."
The next experiments using the stick, hair, and flowers failed. Claire was disappointed about the flowers not sparking a new evolution, but she was pleased that they caused new varieties of flower slimes to evolve from the plant slimes.
"I guess all that's left is to use the broken glass," Doc observed. "Since it's my turn to choose, I'll summon a gray slime for this test."
The gray slime wiggled as it moved under Doc's direction to eat the glass. Nothing happened after it finished absorbing the shiny material.
"Another failure."
Claire shook her head in disappointment.
"It could be you haven't unlocked a higher enough tier to spark an evolution, or maybe it's the wrong slime. That's too bad."
Doc stared down at the gray slime for a moment.
"I get the sense that the glass did have an effect, though. Look, doesn't it seem like the gray slime is acting odd?"
The gray slime below was wiggling some tentacles in the air. While not an odd behavior in and of itself, the slime was actually moving without Doc actively controlling it. Normal slimes didn't waggle their tentacles without outside stimuli. More curious, however, was that Doc could see the sharp edges of glass traveling up the tentacles to the ends, resulting in a deadly-looking tentacle sword.
"I wonder," Doc mused, "what would happen if I gave it more edged items?"
Looking through his astral bag, Doc summoned forth various broken swords and daggers onto the floor. The gray slime quickly slid over without any prompting from Doc and devoured the fragments. After finishing, it began twitching and growing.
Wow, Doc, you figured out a new evolution, Claire cheered. What is it?
A sharp slime, Doc announced as the new slime took form.
This gray family slime is similar to the armor slime. Instead of armor, it devoured sharp weapons. As a result, these weapons surround the slime and can be used for extra damage during ramming attacks. Under certain conditions, it can also release the weapons within like arrows. It is nicknamed Porcupine Slime by new adventurers.
The newly evolved slime did resemble a porcupine, with its gray slime exterior covered in blade fragments that poked out into the air.
I give it a point. A sharp point, Doc declared.
Claire gave herself a face slap and groaned.
That was the worst one yet, Doc.
Chapter 5. After a fun afternoon of experimenting, Doc and Claire decided to stop for the day. They hadn't discovered any additional slime evolutions, but they were pleased with the two new slimes they had found. Doc settled on placing a few sharp slimes on the gray slime family floors, 11 through 15. His thought there was that once adventurers became more familiar with the new slime, he would then have the sharp slimes appear more often on other floors. The booze slimes presented an odd challenge. Like the infernal slime, which was found in demon worlds and not the mortal world, ooze slime and pink slime, the booze slime was a new species of slime that would not have come into existence without outside interference. It was a second-tier evolution that evolved from an herb slime. No one in their right mind would get near an herb slime without killing it, and it was even less likely someone would accidentally or willingly feed the slime alcohol.
Actually, that strange old man might have, Doc acknowledged. I kind of miss him.
I don't, Claire grumbled. Not only was he shifty and suspicious, he didn't even pay us right. Stupid scribbly notebook.
While the boo slime was of the herb slime family, Doc was rather hesitant to add it to the jungle floors. That is, until he realized how the boo slime attacked prey. The boo slime was one of the more cunning slimes, though it still lacked a true awareness of itself. When it sensed prey, the boo slime would release a gaseous alcohol to numb them and make the prey weak, much like an herb slime would do with weak paralysis or poison spores. It was also like the poison slime in that it used its own evaporated slime to create the mist. However, the boo slimes could accomplish this on its own, while the poison slime required fire to vaporize its poison. The booze in the air would seep into the prey through the skin, nose, and mouth until the prey found itself inebriated. Then, the boo slime would attack. Doc felt pleased with the slime and added it as a rare spawn to every floor except the boss floors.
Being drunk is actually an altered state of mind, Claire spoke up as she swung her legs back and forth underneath her outcropping. Any adventurer carrying medicine to fight poison would be able to cure it. So this would weed out any adventurers not thoughtful enough to carry medical supplies. That's interesting, Doc began. But I'm more interested in watching adventurers acting drunk. I feel like a lot of fun things could happen.
Doc suddenly had an idea.
Hey, Claire, I've envisioned a new trap type. In some rooms, instead of having slimes, I'll place small openings in the walls, ceilings, and floors that connect to a space large enough to hold a slime. These slimes would only be ones that produce something in the air. For example, flame slimes and ice slimes to raise and lower the floor's temperature. Poison slimes to drip poison, boo slimes to release alcohol, herb slimes to shed paralysis spores, and flower slimes to make the air smell good. What do you think?
That's a wonderful idea, Doc, Claire replied in amazement. I've never heard of this type of trap before, so it must be your own invention. We have our first unique trap.
Good job, Papa,
Doc heard the twins praise him. Anodyne also praised him, but Doc had learned to drown out her long ravings over his special qualities.
Do we celebrate then? Doc asked Claire. Now that I think about it, we've been partners for almost a year. Wow, time seems to have really flown by.
Claire perked up and dropped off her ledge before flying into the air.
That's a wonderful idea, Claire cheered happily. Celebrating the anniversary of the dungeon and the formation of our family. I can't think of anything better. I need to find more flowers.
Doc, the twins, and Anodyne watched helplessly as Claire vanished once again into her tunnel. The four of them seemed to sigh collectively in defeat. Doc could only create things that killed people, and Anodyne had no idea how to create beautiful things, though she could make nice weapons with her body. Isla and Aisha had hands in their alternate form, but they were also more kill-everything-in-sight-oriented. In the end, only Claire, and perhaps Rowan, had any sense of normal aesthetics. When Claire returned later from the forest, she magically carried an entire bundle of fresh flowers that only held decorative value. She had Doc propagate them in the heart room, along the walls and ceiling, in a swirling pattern.
All right, Doc, now summon a boo slime, Claire demanded happily.
Okay, but why? Doc asked curiously.
So we can drink it, Claire rolled her eyes. Why else?
Doc did as she commanded and created a boo slime. Claire levitated it up to her pedestal and drew her rapier. She punctured the slime, releasing a sweet-smelling drink from its body. The drink was still clearly slime, though.
Everyone drink up,
Claire said as she caught some of the stream in her personal cup. Anodyne and the twins alternated taking sips from the waterfall of booze.
This tastes a little funny, Mommy, the twins commented to Claire. It's an adult taste, Claire informed them, as she made a face while drinking hers. Mommy always had wine to drink and never let me have any. I've lived with Doc for a year, so now I'm responsible and mature just like her. Let's drink up together.
My lord, Anodyne quietly contacted Doc. It appears that this substance holds a high percentage of poison. Should I eliminate the source?
Not now, Doc told her. Claire seems to be enjoying this, and she's been on edge lately with what we've heard from the adventurers and her stabilizing memory. Could she die from this?
Unlikely, Anodyne said after a moment's thought. From my lessons with Mistress Claire, I've learned that all Fey races and their descendants have a strong resistance to most kinds of poison. The amount capable of killing a human is far below that of a pixie like her, I think.
The latter was an observation that Anodyne had made on her own. She considered telling Mistress Claire, but figured the chances of it ever being relevant were incredibly low.
That being said, she is rather small, isn't she?
Well, I guess she knows her body better than I do, so maybe it is fine. Why don't you try enjoying it yourself? Doc asked her.
It would be rude for me to partake while you cannot, my lord, Anodyne said,
as she watched Claire teach Isla and Aisha how to drink alcohol. The two eventually gave up trying to use their human hands and opted to open their warg mouths and let the booze fall into them, much to the mirth of Claire.
Go ahead, Anodyne, Doc prompted. My pleasure is your pleasure. After all, we share emotions through our bond.
Anodyne lit up at the reminder.
Of course, my lord. I shall endeavor to make you as happy as possible.
No, I didn't mean...
Doc said helplessly, as Anodyne plunged under the stream and began to absorb the alcohol not swallowed by Claire or the twins. The three girls cheered her on, slightly tipsy. Soon enough, Anodyne's normal blue color was replaced with a light brown. She appeared unable to hold her humanoid form and kept collapsing into herself, much to the amusement of the girls, who were quickly becoming redder in the face.
Are you girls all right? Doc asked curiously.
Claire giggled and blew her tongue out at Doc.
So silly, Doc. I'm having a great time.
Hey, you see, I'm an adult now, and I can do what I want.
Doc watched Isla and Aisha roll around the floor, giggling at Claire. Anodyne had given up her normal form in favor of copying the boo slime, releasing her own stream of liquid slime.
Anodyne, you aren't made of booze, Doc cried out in warning.
He was too late. The twins began drinking up her stream. Doc watched helplessly as the two began to convulse violently, the acidic slime ravaging their bodies from within. Anodyne, after all, was not made of booze. They soon collapsed and died, turning back into their spirit forms to wait for their respawn. Not unexpectedly, the two were snoring away as spirits. Claire laughed and tossed her cup upward, splattering booze everywhere.
See? I told you they couldn't do it, Claire slurred. They couldn't hold their liquor, 'cause they wasn't adults yet. I'm an adult, you know, Doc. I'm an adult, just like you.
Maybe you should go lie down, Doc advised Claire. I don't think this is a good idea anymore. I'm not even hearing you good through our bond. You sound all funny.
No, I'm not drunk, Doc. I'm not drunk at all, Claire protested. See, let's ask Anna. Anna, am I drunk?
Anodyne responded, clearly unable to form a single understandable word. She then punctuated her babbling remarks by falling onto the floor and splattering. After a moment of struggling to put herself back together, she gave up and also died.
Huh, that's her first death, Doc observed. Well, this is really not going well, Claire. Two of my bosses just died of drinking. What am I supposed to do if we are attacked?
No worries, no worries, Docky.
Claire waved her cup at his crystal.
I have a plan, see? See, we take your trapper idea and fill her up with booze slimes. That way, they all die too. See? So simple.
Before Doc could respond to her, he felt something zoom into his dungeon. Before he could react, the intruder had bypassed every floor and entered the heart room. The thing, a rectangular piece of material, came to rest in front of Claire. It floated at her eye level, waiting.
What's this thing? Claire asked with slurred speech. It's a letter, Doc. See here? A letter, just for me. I wasn't expecting a letter, but here it is. What if I didn't want a letter? Now I have it, so I guess it's mine.
A letter? You mean written words that travel to others over long distances? Who's it from? Doc asked curiously.
Claire squinted as she grabbed the item in question and tried to read it.
I give up, Doc. You see, there are so many words and so little time, you know. I mean, we've been together a year, and we've had to face demons and dungeons and adventurers and zombies. How much more is there, right? And the zombies, Doc. I hate zombies. They always smell, like, so bad and everything.
Claire garbled away as she removed the letter and threw away the envelope.
Oh, I know this letter. It's an invitation. Yeah, I know this. All I gotta do is sign here and...
Claire signed the letter with her finger, and it disappeared in a flash of light. Claire cheered and threw her hands up.
Yippee! Oh, I fell back, Claire said,
as she landed on her back from the force.
Oh, this stone feels so nice.
Doc watched helplessly as Claire began to lightly snore.
Happy anniversary?
Chapter 6
Millie, do you know why we've been called to the guild?
Rowan asked. Earlier that morning, a messenger had arrived from the guild with a letter. It was from Mary, guildmaster of the Adventurers Guild, and she had asked them to visit her as soon as possible. Millie shrugged cutely and said,
"I'm not sure, Rowan. However, I overheard from the builders last night that the rescue team returned last night with the survivors from Durin. They were talking about how the tent quarter we live in was going to become crowded again with all the refugees. I think Father is going to have to hire more workers again to keep up with the new customers."
"That would be good," Rowan said brightly. "That'd mean I'd have more time to practice my magic."
Millie casually punched Rowan's arms.
"Oh, is that the first thing that comes to your head? What about playing or practicing with me?" she asked.
"You're too valuable to the customers to stop working," Rowan said solemnly. "Sacrifice your time and body for the sake of the tavern while I get stronger."
Millie smiled at Rowan and began to flip her magic throwing knife with her hand. Rowan's face twitched as he watched the red knife jump into the air.
"I mean," he corrected himself, "you're a very special person, and I would gladly share any free time your father gives me."
"Really? Thanks, Rowan. You're so sweet," Millie gushed happily.
The knife disappeared into her shirt, and she grabbed Rowan's hand.
"Let's hurry!"
Dragged by Millie, the two ran through the busy streets of the Iron Quarter to the Adventurers Guild. They nodded to the guards at the entrance and hurried to the receptionist counter.
"We have a letter from Master Mary," Millie announced, handing over the parchment to one of the receptionists.
The receptionist smiled as she accepted the letter and read through it.
"I have verified the authenticity of this letter," she announced. "If you could follow me to a classroom while I inform the master."
Millie and Rowan followed her to the newly repaired corridor and into the classroom.
"Please, take a seat. Master Mary will be here soon,"
the receptionist informed them before leaving. The young teens fidgeted in the wooden chairs in a futile effort to find comfort. They gave up after a few minutes and ended up leaning forward onto the table in front of them. Without warning, the classroom door opened and caused them to jump in their seats. Mary entered with a soft smile as she beheld the two children.
"I am pleased you both appear to be well," she said. "I haven't had an opportunity to check up on either of you since the attack. Have you both recovered?"
Rowan stretched his arms and nodded.
"Yes, ma'am. We only received a few scratches from the fight."
"I'm glad."
Mary gave them a kind smile.
"Now, due to your identities, I was unable to officially acknowledge your help with the Flesh Dragon attack. Your anonymous report on what you encountered and heard within the depths of the house was met with a bit of skepticism when I shared it with the rest of the council, but it has been accepted as the truth. To think, Lord Roch was so filled with hate and greed, he agreed to become such a monstrosity."
Rowan and Millie said nothing as they remembered their encounter with the misshapen mound of flesh. In the end, the former lord could barely remember his own name and was filled with mindless aggression and hatred.
"Continuing on," Mary said, "I have called you both here today to introduce you to your new magic teacher. By fate, he was able to escape Durin and has agreed to teach you. May I introduce Mage Gannis, former guildmaster of the Mage Guild of Durin."
At her instruction, an older man entered the room. His face was aged, but not old enough to inspire the worry of others. He moved calmly, with his back straight and his hair down his head. He possessed an impressive beard and mustache, which he stroked while examining the two teens before him. He wore a red gown laced with gold symbols and lines.
"As Master Mary has said, I am Gannis. You two may address me as Teacher, Master Gannis, Mage Gannis, or Sir," he informed the two. "My rank within the hierarchy of magic is Grandmaster Mage. I am primarily a fire magic user, though I also dabble with many other schools of magic. As such, I can only guarantee that I'll be able to teach the both of you up to the level of Adept Mage, since I do not know high-ranking spells outside of fire.
Would you care to be taught by me, knowing this?
Thankfully, Rowan had mastered the art of the straight face, as he was pelted by Doc and Claire's shouts of affirmation and questions. He noted that Claire didn't sound well and opted to check on her condition later.
I seek to master magic and thus will accept you, Master Gannis, as my teacher.
Rowan stood and bowed.
I, Millie, greet my new teacher.
Millie also bowed. Mary nodded with a smile.
Then I will leave it to you, Mage Gannis. Please, take as much time as you need in this class now and in the future.
With that said, she left the room. Gannis smiled at his two new students.
Now, would either of you care to ask me a question before we begin?
Why are you a Grandmaster Mage? Millie asked. Isn't that like being a Magus?
Gannis chuckled.
I assume you are thinking of Magus Falcon, correct? To answer that, you are both familiar with the adventurer rankings?
Millie and Rowan nodded affirmatively.
Magic users have a similar method for ranking an individual's strength. Every magic user employs the same system, no matter their focus or discipline. Rather than using the alphabet to rank ourselves, mages are classified according to the following system: Apprentice Mage, Adept Mage, Journeyman Mage, Master Mage, Grandmaster Mage, Magus, and Saint. Every magic group uses this system. For example, witches are ranked Apprentice Witch, Adept Witch, Journeyman Witch, etc. Anyone who has reached the Grandmaster is considered elite within a country, while Magi are among the strongest beings of the continent. The very, very few who have reached Saint level have already departed this world to join the ranks of the gods or demons. Now, are there any other questions?
So how can you help us reach the adept level if you don't know the high-level spells outside the Fire Family? Millie asked.
All magic users require the same type of foundational training to use magic, Gannis explained. Anyone who can use magic without being taught is a novice magic user. They gain the rank of apprentice once they adopt a teacher. Adepts are magic users who possess a strong foundation in chanting, magical knowledge, mastery over one basic spell, each from 5 different magic families, and, finally, a specific level of mana within their body. I can assist setting this foundation for the both of you, and I can share my insights into whatever magic families you are more inclined to.
He turned to face Millie.
I've heard of your more unusual circumstances from Master Mary. Chosen ones, like you, are inclined toward the same training clergy members undergo. Your training will be of the same basic exercises up to the level of journeyman. This system of rating is broken up into friar, nun, priest and priestess, father and mother, and finally, holy father and holy mother. Training you into an adept would place you at the high end of being a nun.
Millie scratched her head.
This is a lot of information to process.
Gannis chuckled.
True, I am overloading you both right now. However, this is common knowledge within the adult world, so it is important you both know it. Being aware of the difference of power between you and an enemy could be the difference between life and death, especially now. I've heard that Mary has provided you both with a basic meditation technique. Please, show it to me. Use the standing pose.
Millie and Rowan nodded and stood up. Folding their hands in front of their chests, the two began channeling their mana from their chests through their arms in a circular fashion. A slight magical mist arose from their bodies. Gannis observed them for a moment before calling out,
That's enough.
When the two had stopped, he continued,
Your technique isn't bad,
but the low level of magic coming off of your bodies tells me you both are far from your potential. Rowan, you are still lacking in the necessary control you need to move the vast amount of mana